Welcome to Rocks to Pearls, presented by the League of Dreams. Hi, I'm your host, Mike Borden. I was fortunate to play 14 years in the big leagues. There were ups and downs along the way I think everyone can relate to in everyday life. I learned ways to overcome adversity and persevere, as I was open to learning from others by watching and listening. I'll be interviewing sports figures, business and community leaders, and amazing human beings that have had their own unique and inspiring stories. I look forward to sharing their process of turning rocks into pearls.
Hi, I'm Frank Kolarik, and I'm the president and founder of the League of Dreams, a nonprofit organization that makes the great game of baseball and softball accessible for all, regardless of intellectual or physical abilities. Leveling the playing field, the League of Dreams provides an outlet for the special needs and at-risk communities to take the field, enjoy a sport, believe in themselves, and leave empowered. Based and founded in Baltimore, Maryland, this is our 18th season. The League of Dreams also holds instructional clinics and games in other parts of the country. Programs include in and after school programs, instructional camps and clinics, outings for the military families, special events with minor and major league ball clubs, the college experience, and our international coaches seminars. Now that the world is starting to open up again, we are eager to get back on the fields and bring people of all abilities and ages together. The Rocks to Pearls podcast was created as an outlet for us to reach out and make a difference. We thank you for listening. To learn more about the League of Dreams and how you can participate and support our mission, please visit the League of Dreams website at www.leagueofdreams.org or give us a call at 410-719-1641. We look forward to hearing from you and hopefully see you on a ball field in the very near future.
I competed against my next guest at the College World Series back in 1986. The competition continued when he was playing for the Minnesota Twins and I the Oakland A's. We finally got to be teammates in 1997 with the Baltimore Orioles. He's one of the hardest working and respected players I've ever been around. My good friend, Jeff Rebele.
Thank you so much for being on the show today. It's called Rocks to Pearls. I don't know if what you think about that, but Rocks to Pearls is kind of what happened to me when I was a kid. I kind of grew up throwing rocks at trees. I was waiting for the bus, hitting rocks with my bat. And I know getting into the minor leagues, some of the old coaches used to say, man, pick up those rocks, right? The nasty beat up balls. Say you want to make it to the big leagues, man, and you want to hit pearls, you got to get up there. So
you got to do it. You got to do it. Whatever we had, man, we didn't have baseballs all the time, you know? You got to swing whatever you got.
No, absolutely. So, you know, 12 years in the big leagues, Jeff Rebele, and incredible numbers. I always admired you as a player and what you had to do to prepare yourself for the really, I think, the toughest moments. Now, don't shake your head, man, because I know you're a humble son of a gun. I'm not going to dwell on it. I just want to say how much I respect the way you went about your business.
You didn't suck either, Mike. You didn't suck either. Now I'm going to be honest. You know, you played every day, which was hard to do. I got to sit and watch a little bit, man. It's a little easier program.
I know when I watched you, you always seemed to rise to the occasion. Everybody, of course, in Baltimore, you know, remembers the Randy Johnson home run. A great year. You and I were teammates in 97.
Yeah, and, that was awesome.
You know, you played really well. You were always counting on to come in late in ball games, typically when I would get pinch hit for and have to make the tougher plays at the end of the game.
Yeah, or I had to run for a rip. Yeah,
exactly. But that game, you know, Davey Johnson decided to go all righties, man, and just really put the pressure on Johnson. You had past success and you got him again, but that's now come on now. The playoffs is a completely different situation to try to get hyped up for a regular season game.
Yeah, that you're already hyped up, man. Blind squirrel finds an acorn, like I like to say. That day though, I mean, honestly, it was hard to see. And my philosophy on him, and I told guys whenever I went, well, he seemed to do well, which is he's going to get you one or two times. He's going to punch you out once or twice a game. He gets everybody, you know, at least once. So it's the other bats you got to do something with. So we had a great year, man. That was fun. And, you know, that's what you play for, man, is to get to the playoffs. And I wish we'd have done a little better. I think we were a really good team. It just didn't work out, man. It was crazy how Cleveland got, you know, I thought they got a little lucky at times. But at the end of the day, it was a great experience. Had a good time playing with you, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Before the Orioles, though, and before we talk about the rest of your career, you came up with the Minnesota Twins. I see the Twins jersey in the background. And, you know I had great times playing for Baltimore. I still kind of – I call Baltimore my home. Absolutely. But I know there's a special place in my heart for coming up with the Oakland A's. 10 years in that organization. I think, you know, you and I had very similar paths. We played in that same, you know, 90s era of baseball. And I felt fortunate every day to have learned from some of the greatest, you know, Tony La Russa, Dave Stewart, all those incredible players the A's had. And then looking right down the street, you know, in the same division, Minnesota had almost a mirror image kind of team and manager.
And absolutely. I mean, it was exactly the same stuff. And, you know, I spent a little more time in Double A than you might have. I was around when Walt Weiss was in Double A. I think we were both together. So you kind of cruised on by like a lot of people did with me. I got to Double A really fast. I was there after a half season and kind of just kind of up and down Double A, Triple A guy. And, you know, I kind of grinded it out in the minor leagues. And, you know, you had a nice path where you continued to every year improve. And then you got shoved into playoff games right away, man. So you had experience. I didn't get into the playoffs until 97. Now we had really good teams. And we were close, you know, back then they didn't have the wild card in 92 when I got called up. But I was the only rookie I think that got called up that year. So just kind of shows you what it is today. Like there's guys flying up and down the rosters all the time. But I think I was the only rookie that year to get called up in 92. And we were in the playoff run. Didn't quite make it. But, man, you learn so much being around guys that know. And the pressure level of playing in the major leagues versus the minor leagues is so different. You know, it's just you know, it's just, there's, you know, it's about winning and you got to be a winning baseball player. You don't get to play long and you got to be able to do everything. And I know this is about, you know, learning how to play the game. You have to learn to do everything well. And when guys like us, you know, we had a little bit of talent. I will say that we, you know, we could catch a ball and throw it to first base and do whatever, but if we didn't have all those backside things where we put the ball in play at certain times and we're able to move runners and bunt them over and get hits, you know, we would have never stayed as long as we did. And that's the difference, is you got to learn the entire game. We weren't as talented as some of the guys that came, you know, around with us, but they also didn't play very long because they were relying on their talents. So,
yeah, no, absolutely. So, yeah. And that's such a big reason why you played so long, you know, in the major leagues. I think managers trust that, but did you learn that kind of baseball stuff at LSU, such a highly regarded program, or was this stuff that you learned, you know, as a kid playing in the backyard?
Don't go down to that Maine LSU matchup. Don't do it. Don't try to go to third base.
I tried to skip right past it, Rev.
Hey, the cutoff and relay, man. Don't test us. We learned that a while back. So yeah, I mean, honestly, you do learn it at a young age. But then I went to a junior college in Chicago, the same place where Kirby Puckett went to school. My guy, Lance Johnson, and those guys. And it was a really great junior college program. So I learned the fundamentals there. I was a good high school player, but not, I mean, like I batted 255 in high school, my junior year. My senior year, I had batted 333 with no homers. Like I could catch it and throw it the first pretty well, but I didn't really have any scholarship offers. So I go to junior college, become a first team All-American. Then I chose LSU, where I learned how to win and when to pick off guys and just the finer points of the game. I already had a lot of that, but at the same point, they taught me more. And Skip Bertman was awesome. And so was Bob Simmons, a legendary coach in junior college. So I was like the perfect storm. And then, you know, to get drafted and do my thing, it was great. But all the way through, I had opportunities when I was younger, and they just kept building. It was kind of like going through the minor leagues. You just keep building on your experiences. And the next thing you know, you're right there. Right. So I started out being a kid, you know, taking my wiffle ball bat out and playing wiffle ball. And then when it would get dark, I would hit the fireflies with the wiffle ball bat, you know, and, you know, you're just rocketing fireflies, you know? So, you know, it's just kind of things like that. And then you do things. I worked on, I bought a little rubber baseball, a little super ball. That was one of those, it was a dime back then, probably it's 25 cents now, those little rubber ones. And I had a glove that was closed, and I would play a game against a brick wall with myself that I'd have to throw a ball, and within 4 seconds, within one Mississippi, two Mississippi, within four Mississippi, I had to catch it and be the first baseman as well and catch it and pick it myself. So, you know, people ask, well, how do you get your hands? It's like, I think I've been doing things my whole life. You know, I just, and then it developed into, I went to high school and I was an okay player, but I got to play up against in a semi-pro league where there was ex-pro guys and ex-college guy or current college guys. And I played against that higher level competition. And I think it got me ready for junior college because it became a first team All-American. Yeah. I mean, you know, and I, without those experiences leading up all the way through, you just don't get to where you're at. Yeah. You just got to keep working.
No, absolutely. Did you play other sports as a kid?
Oh yeah, man. I'm a big fan of multi-sports. I was a hockey guy going up, and then I love that sport. Toughness, a little quickness, you know, decision-making has to be quick, fast-moving contact sport. I enjoyed that. I played, my buddies were all basketball players. So in high school, they were a good basketball team. And so I would be a gym rat during the day with them at the YMCA, play basketball till noon or 1 o'clock. And then I would go home, have lunch and get ready for my game in the evening playing baseball. So it was a lot of that. It was like pickup games. And, you know, there were also baseball players that just didn't stick it out. And so that was kind of our deal. You know, we go play home run derby. We had other kids in the neighborhood when I was younger. Dad would pick us up and we would just go play, you know, and, you know, whether it was softball or whatever, we go out and just play and hit flies and do whatever. And that was kind of the stuff that kids were outside doing more stuff.
Yeah.
And being athletic. So it didn't matter what sport we played that day. We were going to be athletic doing it. And I think it teaches you a little bit about, you know, not specializing so much, but being a good athlete.
Yeah. Well said. No, I believe that. And I also think too, I felt like I learned more from my peers, like playing sandlot ball. If I did something wrong, you talk about hockey, man. When I first started playing pond hockey, if I went off sides, oh my gosh, I heard about that. Like in a second. So that's how I learned, you know, your friends, your peers hold you accountable.
Yeah. You didn't get the, hey, Johnny, you're off sides again. You know, it's like, hey, get on sides. Like I'm not doing this, you know, it's a little more intense. So yeah, we battle with that. I have an organization where we're coaching kids and some of them are lacking some of the basic knowledge of the game. And it's like, how hard do you get on them about the things that you have to keep telling them every day? Like, you know, this, you got to cover first base, you know, like you got to be the cutoff man here. It's like, you know, there's a time when you have to start picking these things up and you have to make them more accountable than just explaining it to them. It's like, there's got to be some repercussions or they're just going to continue to do it. So it's a, you know, I think those things we learned early on, and some of these kids have not had that knowledge of those guys, you know, understanding the game as well. So we're teaching it, and now we're playing, you know, higher level baseball. We're trying to move and play a higher level. So it gets a little more intense and you have to make those decisions. And that's part of the decision-making. Like I talk about with multiple sports, if you play hockey and you have to make split second decisions or you're going to end up, you know, getting drilled or you're going to be off sides or whatever, there's people, you know, there's quick decisions that have to be made in baseball as well. You just have more time in between. And if you're not a good decision maker in any sport, you're going to struggle.
Yeah.
So decision making is important.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great reference. And I can kind of, I didn't play as much hockey as you did growing up. I played football. And I think very similar in the sense that you start understanding that you rely on your teammates so much. And I think baseball is really unique in that sense. There's a lot of individualism, but you still got to understand that team concept. So I think that makes you maybe focus a little bit more on really what matters, more of that detail that you're kind of talking to.
It does. You have to have techniques. I played football as well. And then I played my freshman year and I was, they had me at running back and I really didn't like being, I liked hitting people. So I wanted to move over to the defensive side. They weren't giving me a lot of opportunities my sophomore year. And I'm like, okay, I'm going back to hockey. So I'm back to high school hockey. And, you know, you just kind of find your way. Both great sports are just at the same time. Right. And so, you know, I agree with you that you're finding your way, you're doing your thing. And in the meantime, you're still developing your skills at everything. But I do believe if you're an athlete, if you just keep work on movements and being an athlete, you can pick up all the sports. Baseball's hard. Like you need to learn the game. Football's one you can pretty pick up anytime. I think at at any age, you can kind of like, hey, I run fast and it's a collision sport, right?
Yeah.
But some of these finesse sports, you have to start playing them at an earlier level. And some of that's hand-eye coordination and just working on things. And when you talk about doing things back in the day, I think one of the biggest things that helped me hitting wise was I had an older brother who played 6 years in pro ball as well. He was a good player. He was on a 40-man roster and was a good athlete. And his buddy in my neighborhood was also 4 years older than me, and they played or whatever. But I was kind of the young kid playing, but we would play like a game where you would get about 45 feet away and pitch to the other guy. We'd put on our old plastic helmets and mimic the guy, Willie Stargell, and they were like Juan Marichal, you know what I mean? And so we're chucking it up there. We got the A's hat on. I got to go up to Reggie Jackson. So, you know, you're up there doing your thing, but it was like home run derby, but they were chucking it. Yeah. You know, like we were throwing breaking balls and ripping fastballs, and it was, you know, it challenged me, right? But I'm working on my skills as I got better. And I think those things all the way along, you know, we'll talk about it all day long, but those little things, you know, those, and I will say this, along that line, there's a guy named Brian Boehringer I played with, played a long time in a big league as a pitcher. And he was talking about helping kids and he was doing lessons or whatever. And one of the dads said, hey, we picked up more games. We're playing our whatever game this summer. And he was kind of disappointed. And he's like, you know, to kind of show you how development works, he's like, okay. So he picks up, you know, gets to play in a doubleheader this weekend. And he's been playing all these games. He's like, how many bats he gets? He goes, well, he ended up with 5 at bats. And he goes, and what did he, you know, how many balls did he get hit to him? And he's like, 1. And he's like, he could have stayed at home, gotten 240 at bats in a pickup game with his buddies and developed. And instead he gets 5 at bats in a meaningless game that he's worried about getting hits. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? That's the difference in development. And that's where the game is kind of lost a little bit there.
Yeah, I agree. And it's good that you're still working with kids and still trying to promote it the right way. I'm getting more involved, giving lessons and stuff like that. And to stay kind of on that topic, though, with kids, tell me your thoughts on, I think this is a very interesting time, especially sport in general, coming out of this COVID lockdown and all the issues I think that especially young kids are having, everybody, but socially now, not being outdoors a lot, it doesn't seem like team participation. This certainly didn't help that. So trying to get kids back outside. But not just that, but even how do you approach them? Do you approach them with the same, come on, let's go? Or do you have a little bit of empathy from what these guys have been going through?
Yeah, we've had some empathy with the kids. And, you know, we kind of got started later with this 14U team I'm coaching. And, you know, some of them didn't get to play a lot last year. So there's, you know, there's that development they're missing, right? And some of these kids are going in, one of them, you know, they're going into high school next year. And so I have a few 13-year-olds on that team too. So you kind of have to mend the team together a little bit. But yes, it is tough. But, you know, in Ohio, we don't have as much of the lockdown stuff going on. It's really, they've been out, they've been doing everything. Okay. And yeah, we don't really have a lot of that. I laugh. I'm like, I don't think there's COVID in Ohio, but there is obviously. but the kids are, you know, it's pretty full season this year. We're all playing, doing our thing.
Great.
You know, you wave to the other team when the game's over versus going over and shaking hands. But ultimately, it is a situation where it has been difficult. And these kids need to get out and do a lot and get back to acclimated to playing and being a kid again. And so you kind of got to make it fun for them.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're in high school next year and it's going to be a different animal. So we try to prepare them. It's kind of like when they're in high school and we get our older teams going and they're getting ready for college. Like we're preparing them for the next stage of, you know, how to play in college and what you're going to be exposed to. And if you get exposed a little bit at a time, kind of like we talk about developing, you know, you're going to have coaches that aren't real, their livelihoods are on the line if they don't win. So you have to get them prepared for that as they move forward. Yeah. Just like we are now getting ready for high school. You're going to have coaches that are going to yell at you. Mm-hmm. You know, you're just going to have to get used to it. Right. So that's kind of how we do it. And you have to kind of take it a case by case with the kids. But some don't respond, you know, some are only respond to positive things. Some respond to, you know, getting in there behind a little bit and pushing them a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So take me back to when you were a little leaguer and stuff, as far as couple things, some mentors, maybe people that helped you when you were younger. And did you, I don't want to get too personal, but was there any kind of adverse times where you kind of doubted yourself or felt uncomfortable in your situation?
Yeah. I mean, I always had confidence. My parents instilled a lot of confidence in me. My dad was a really good three sport athlete. And, you know, that was probably my mentor's for, he was always a coach of mine and helped us get through. So I had advantages, right. And I had an older brother who was a really good player and athlete, and he didn't let me win. Like we played basketball I remember playing basketball in the driveway, and he would always beat me, you know, he would always, you know, and most of the time drub me. And one time I beat him, and then I cried because I thought he let me win, and he didn't let me win. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, that's tough, right? So, yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, it's, you know, those situations where you have a parent who's really athletic and had me help coach, but was not the guy who was like putting me in front of everybody. He, you know, pushed me to compete and do what I needed to do. So yeah, those are kind of my mentor guys. I can't remember the other part of the question, but that was kind of what gets you through to the next thing. And then I had opportunities from, you know, a local guy was a coach here. Ted Mills used to have an organization, and he put a younger team together of, I was one of two high school kids that got to play in that semi-pro league. And we had a guy named Mickey McGuire, who used to be in the Orioles organization, was a player coach. He was a AAA guy who was supposed to get called up and broke his hand. And he was a great mentor to me of understanding that first year how to play, right? And as you know, in the minor leagues, you get in a lot of fights. I had my first fight where they threw at me, and I didn't even know what was going on, and he went after the guy. So, you know, you learn as you go.
Yeah.
On the world, right? But yeah, it's good stuff. I think you need somebody to help guide you and to push you along the process. My mom was a dance teacher. She's pretty athletic, and she always thinks it's the, you know, the dance, the acrobat and everything that got me there. She goes, you know, you got all your athleticism from me. And I kind of laugh, but I think it was a combination of a lot of people and a lot of things, as you know, and a lot of good breaks.
Yeah. Yeah. I think your parents kind of holding you accountable to some degree, your older brother holding you accountable.
For sure.
So you make it through, and out of high school, not highly recruited or anything like that, but so how did you kind of find your way? Did you like take responsibility on your own and go to the look for junior college, or how did that work?
Yeah. So again, my brother was the lead guy. We went to Southern Illinois baseball camp. Itchy Jones used to be a legendary coach at Southern Illinois. He had a great camp, and we went there. My brother always wanted to go to Southern Illinois. Well, while we were at that camp, I was younger. I took a buddy. We all went, and we went for a week or whatever. And we did the camp. And, you know, I was just playing baseball, probably in the sixth grade or eighth grade or something. I was probably in the eighth grade. And we went up and played, and he was a junior in high school, going to be a senior that summer. And Coach Simmons was there coaching there, saw him. And my brother ran like a 6'6", 60. Like, he was fast. And so he talked about his organization. He went up there. He took a trip, went up there and did really well, and ended up going to Southern Illinois.
Okay.
Where he wanted to go. And I kind of saw his path. I saw how well he was doing at Southern Illinois in the Missouri Valley. And I said, I'm going to go up there. And that's where my opportunity was. I had schools come look at me a little bit, but I think Wright State, which is a good program now, was an up and coming program. They had offered me something, you know, I don't even know what it was. I don't even remember, but I was already going to Triton because I knew the stepping stone was, if I play really well here, I can go wherever I want to go, wherever that may be. And by my sophomore year, I pretty much could have gone anywhere in the country. And I just knew Skip Bertman. My brother played against him at Miami down there. And he's like, Skip Berman's going to be the real deal. I went on a recruiting trip, and, you know, the rest is history. It was beautiful. I couldn't have picked a better spot for me. It was a great opportunity. I played with some great players, a lot of big league guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just, this is a great experience. As you know, when you play at a high level of college, there's nothing better, you know, other than playing playoff baseball in the major leagues, of the camaraderie and the, you know, the sacrifice you put in. And, I'm still best friends with a lot of those guys today. And Baton Rouge, we're supposed to have a social Zoom this weekend.
Nice.
So just stay together. And that was kind of my experience.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I love the fact that I think it's in college where then you find a collective group of guys that all have a common goal. You know, they love the game. their heart and soul is in it. You could call them up, hey, instead of studying, let's go hit, you know, one of those kind of things. So yeah, that's when that bond really starts coming hold. And then when it goes to professionally, you make that next step. So, I mean, you had great, great college instruction, and I'm going to go right back to the, you know, that ability to play at a high level took you right into the College World Series. And that's when you and I originally locked horns, right? In the College World Series at Rosenblatt Stadium.
Yeah. Didn't know who Mike Bordick was.
No, you didn't. And so that was my second trip, believe it or not. So I went my freshman year. University of Maine was kind of a hotbed
of
baseball back
in the Swift. Billy Swift back in the day.
Absolutely. Of course, the regional format has changed since then, so it's a lot tougher to get in. But we met up with you my junior year, and I stretched tried to stretch a double into a triple, and I got hosed by you at third base to end the inning. I made the third out at third base.
That's a fundamental mistake there. But I think a few of your teammates did the same thing. I think we did three or four of those. Yeah, we had a few of those. So you guys were used to getting the extra base, I think.
We weren't up against those strong arms from the SEC. That's for sure. How about some of the mentors getting into pro ball? You mentioned, TKA and Kirby Puckett. How about like in the minor leagues? I know I had a sponsor. Tommy Reynolds was a guy that loved me. He was my manager in single A and double A. Do you have those kind of coaches?
Yeah, absolutely. I had a lot of guys that liked the way I play. I had my first two managers, for whatever reason, didn't stick in the organization. So that's how I kind of got stuck in double A, is a lot of these other guys had Don Leppard was their guy at Kenosha, and he was sending guys through. And they were good players, you know, Scott Layas and these other guys were good players, but I was kind of getting stuck in double A because my managers kept leaving. So, you know, as you know, in the winter meetings, they have discussions about who's doing well, whatever. Well, your manager's not there to promote you and say, hey, he's doing a really good job. And so I kind of got stuck there. And then Gardenhire came in, Ron Gardenhire, who was awesome, man. He was kind of like me, you know, kind of a grinder, catch and throw at the first guy. And I didn't really play well for him that first year. In my third year in double A. And, but he thought I was unbelievable. And I hit like 235 or something. I'm like, I had a horrible year. You should see me the past 2 years, you know? And he's like, well, you play really well. And so he kind of stuck with me. He would send me up to triple A, and the triple A manager, I won't name him, he's a super nice guy, but he didn't think I could play. And so I found out later in the winter meetings the next year, they had a huge, he's like, yeah, really good kid. Just can't field. And, whatever. And Gardy's like, oh, I got to stop you right now, you know, and stepped up for me. Cause I heard this from the pitching coach who said, Gardy stepped up for you. Like, this is the best fielder in our organization, period. Like, even at the big league level, I think this guy is as good as it gets. I don't understand why I send him up there. He's the best fielder ever. And you see him and he's not a good guy. So that kind of saved me a little bit along the lines. And then there was a time when I got released. I didn't get released, but I was supposed to be in triple A. They sent me back down to double A. And for the fifth year or fourth year or whatever it was, fifth year. And I was good. Not only was I going back to double A, but I was going to be the utility guy behind Knobloch and a couple other players. And, you know, I was going to quit. And my brother had done the same thing and he quit too soon. And he was like, listen, man, you can always go get a real job. Stick it out. I had a few other coaches, Dan Rohn, and then Gardy was like, dude, you can come play for me. I will play you as much as I can. And then the organization is going to tell me I can't play you. And then I'm going to keep you in there a couple of days, and I got to sit you, and then I'll get you back in because you're by far my best guy. So literally went to the playoffs that year, and I got to play third base in the playoffs because we were trying to win. And it was kind of that tight timeline, and I could have quit then. And, you know, 2 years later, I'm in the big leagues. And I got 12 years, you know? Those are the kind of stories that if I don't have those people that have those experiences and pass that on, I'm not talking to you today. We're not buddies.
No, absolutely. And you dig a little bit deeper in those hard times, right? Persevere through. I think you and I are so similar in that regard, to be able to reach back maybe in somebody's words that you heard, or the peers around you that help push you through the tough times, because it ain't easy, man. We say 12 years in the major leagues was probably 11.98% full of stress and angst and worry. Yes. About, you know, staying in the big league, supporting for your family, you know, that kind of stuff. But
I showed up all the time in spring training, didn't have a job. Like, I was the odd man out. I showed up in L.A. with the Dodgers, and I had been in the big leagues 9.5 years, And, you know, Kevin Malone was trying to get me a 2-year deal, but he was not, didn't have the pull he had back then because they were trying to get him out, I think. And I show up, he signs me. I'm in the minor league locker room the entire spring training. And they had 11 utility guys. And I mean, I can tell you stories about, I was the bat boy for the backup game. Well, actually the double A guy was the bat boy. And I'm like, well, at least I'm not the bat boy. Then they put him in the game and they asked me to get the bats. And I got almost 10 years in the big leagues. My number was 96, which isn't a big deal back now. But back then, anything over 40 something was not good. I'm number 96. And they go, I'd have big league guys and umpires going, what are you wearing 96? I'm like, it's for the amount of years I have in the big leagues, 9.6.
Nice.
So I still have that jersey because that's the kind of stuff that we go through that people don't know. And yeah. I end up, I told them, I'm like, I'm going to be in the big leagues the whole year. You guys just don't know it yet. And sure, I played the whole year and I played the next year. Almost was going to be the starting shortstop probably if we were in the playoffs, you know, one with the Dodgers. And so you just kind of like, I, as you know, man, you've had tons of people tell you you're never going to be any good. Mm-hmm. Like you know, I had a guy in college, collegiate league, who was playing these guys from bigger college in front of me when I was at a junior college. And I felt like I was better than these guys. And he just kept playing them. I finally, I was like, dude, I'm out. And he's like, oh no, I'll play. I'm like, no, you had your shot. Like I'm batting 370, whatever. And I'm hitting and I'm playing once every 4 days. So I need to go play. So I went back to that semi-pro league. And we ended up winning the national championship there. And I ran into that guy in the big leagues in Kansas City. He shows up. He had another player that was a big time player who, you know, they were friends, whatever. He goes, hey, this guy wants to talk to you. And I'm like, okay. You know, I go up and I told him, he goes, well, I guess you showed me, you know, you said you were going to be in the big leagues and, you know, I guess you showed me. I'm like, well, yeah, I appreciate that. But those guys are, there's always those guys. You just got to overcome that. You got to have that, that, I guess, self-confidence that you're just going to continue to get better.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's why managers loved you so much. And I know as a teammate loved you so much because every day you went out there to try to get better. The games that you might not have been in the starting lineup, you were out there playing your game in defense at the highest level. And I think that's why when you went in there at crunch time in the eighth and ninth inning or in the postseason, you were able to play at your highest level. So,
well, let me say this. I always felt like I outworked everybody. I took more ground balls, I felt like, than any human being that ever played the game because I had to. I wasn't as talented as everybody else. I wanted to be prepared. Yeah. I overprepared for fear that I wasn't going to perform on the field for my teammates. And so I went out there and prepared. I would say that you're a close guy with that. Like you took a lot of ground. They used to have to call me in for group four to go hit. You're like, Rab, your group's hitting, you know. But I caught balls for Rip and Alomar and you and Palmeiro, and then I got my ground balls.
Yeah, yeah.
You guys got him in earlier. And I know you had the same mindset. Like you were, I am getting my work in. Yeah, and that is a professional. And that's how you do it. Then people ask me all the time, well, how did you do it? Like, I don't even know how I did it. But I look at it and I'm like, I just outworked guys is what it was.
Yeah.
I was prepared.
But your work was done the right way. You know, very rarely did you, I don't even ever remember you messing around. You know, I think you were always tried to be as fundamentally sound as possible. And I think what's cool too, because I love taking ground balls, especially in spring training. I think the regular season routines were a little bit different, but like in spring training, you and I could talk about whether it be a game or a play or who knows what, but as soon as that ground ball was hit, it's like ultimate focus on doing it the right way, make the throw and then come back, start the conversation.
Goes
the
around.
There it goes again.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I kind of remember my joking around was telling Sammy Perlazzo to my last few was like, I want to dive for the ball in the hole. And so he would rocking them over there and I'm going farther, hit it farther. And he would laugh, you know, and that was kind of our joke was to try and get that, to, you know, and, but, you know, again, you're, I guess it's your routine of what you do. You had a routine, man. You wanted this many balls this way. And you used to get on Sam too, like, hey, over here a little bit, you're over here. Yeah, you know, like just taking fun of guys. That's not easy to hit fungos.
By no,
you probably figured out.
Exactly.
So those guys are special, but yeah, that's kind of how we do it. And that's how we did and made the success that we are, because I think today I feel like I'm a really knowledgeable infield guy. I have a master's in infield play in baseball, and it's through learning things from what you guys did and learning things from the best coaches in the world and playing at the highest level with the greatest players and knowing what that is and what you got to do that. And the inside knowledge you have to know, like you knew every pitch that was being thrown and where that guy was probably going to hit that ball before the pitch was thrown. And that's the kind of stuff that people just don't understand goes on in a real game. Yeah. But you had that and you were able to do it every day and play every day, which I was not physically capable of doing. I was really good at playing once in a while and being good at that, which is also hard in its own way. But again, and not knowing where you're going to play. But again, I have the utmost respect for those guys that go out there and play every day and just grind it out, man. It's tough.
Well, I think we both have, you know, respect for each other, how we went about our business. And I think it's both kind of held on, you know, our determination and perseverance. Awesome insight, Jeff. Thanks for your stories. I think you're going to help a lot of kids, you know, with some of that insight, because I think kids nowadays have a lot of challenges. You got to find ways to mentally kind of overcome some things. And it's through the experience of guys like you that are definitely going
to
help.
Well, we're going to have to get you down to the Reb Sports Academy here in Dayton, Ohio, brother. You're going to come in. We're going to do a little work. Well, I'll put them in front of the master.
Absolutely. Right? Speaking of that, so how can people find you? I mean, Reb Sports Academy.
Yeah, just Reb Sports Academy. I'm in Dayton, Ohio. You just Google me and you'll probably find something on Reb Sports Academy. Okay. My sons help. They have a knowledge of the game as well that's outstanding. And we're just trying to pass that on. Baseball in Dayton, Ohio, it's not as good as it should be. I know Cincinnati's pretty good and we're trying to get their kids loaded up and whatever. In the past, we've always had some really good kids and we draw from an area. But it's a lot about coaching the kids, just getting them better each year. And by the end, if you start earlier, you're definitely going to be a really good high school player and possibly a college player, which is not easy to do. But, you know, and ultimately we've got a couple of pro guys. So we'll see how it goes. But we're getting back into it. And you can look us up and find us, man. But I want to get you in. You got to come up.
Sounds good, brother. Sounds good. Hey, thanks so much for being on Rocks and Pearls. Great catching
up with you. Anytime, brother. Love it, Bordy.
All right, man. Take care of yourself, Rev.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Rocks to Pearls, brought to you by the League of Dreams. Each episode, we'll hear from business leaders, sports figures, and community leaders on their unique secrets to success. I'm Mike Bordick, and I hope you'll join us again. And remember, every day is a new opportunity. Stay determined.